Hey, it's Jordan, and I've got a podcast for you. Commons is Canada's most popular podcast about politics. Last season, they tried to answer the question, how corrupt is Canada? This time around, they're investigating our national addiction, oil. The current season featuring host Archie Mann is called Crude, and it's about Canada's relationship with the oil industry. The good, the bad, the ugly, and the weird. You'll find Commons wherever you get your podcasts, so go check it out. One day, very soon, a new royal will enter the world, and the surprisingly large portion of the world that really cares about these things will get answers to questions they've been wondering about since there was a tiny inkling of a hint of a rumor that Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex to you, commoner, might be expecting.
Baby Sussex is due almost any day, and we have questions. Is it a boy or a girl?
Could this be how Harry and Meghan's baby might look?
What are Meghan and Harry going to name it?
So you're saying the end of April, do you think?
Either way, awfully cute.
Now, these questions are always asked about every royal baby, and I promise you I don't care a single tiny bit about the answers to any of them. But this royal baby comes with a second set of questions. They are nothing like the first set. Meghan Markle identifies as biracial, which means that this child may not be quite as lily white as every single other royal person in England. And if the conversation around Meghan and Harry's whirlwind romance and wedding and pregnancy has been any indication, it's going to lead to some interesting discussion about mixed-race babies and the fetishization of biracial people in general. How different will this child be treated in the media? How do we treat mixed-race people in general? Where does that fetishization come from? And, to be fair, is this kind of scrutiny, at least in part, what Meghan Markle signed up for when she said yes to a prince? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Ebony Renee Baker is a writer at Flare.com. For those of us, like me and our producer Claire, and probably many other people who don't give daily thoughts to the royals, what is up with the new royal baby? Where did Harry and Meghan come from?
Well, I wouldn't consider myself a royal watcher myself, but just working in media, you kind of grow to follow this family. And particularly when there's a new member of the family, it becomes this whole huge phenomenon. Same thing happened with Kate Middleton when she joined the family with William. And with Meghan, it was a little bit of a different story because she was an actress and she was based in Toronto and she's American. And in this situation, it was, as they call it, a whirlwind romance because they dated for just over a year, I think, before they announced their engagement. So it was kind of, I guess, the start of this. There were rumors swirling about at the end of 2016 that they were dating. And in this situation, their romance actually came out in a very unusual way. And that was in November 2016, Prince Harry's communications secretary made a statement that the royal family called very unusual in the sense that he had to address the treatment of Meghan Markle, which he announced as his girlfriend, because there were a lot of instances where there were conversations with very racial undertones. She was being stalked, her mother was being stalked, and essentially he wanted to combat all of the unusual racist treatment of his girlfriend. So there was a headline, for example, the Daily Mail posted a headline saying that Harry's girl was straight out of Compton, in brackets almost, when in actuality she is from a very wealthy family, neighborhood in Beverly Hills. There were a lot of comments saying that, oh, this is a modern romance. This is a unconventional romance.
What is that?
Exactly. In this day and age, like, they're, what would they be, medieval? Like, they're just a regular couple. So basically, their romance came to be known to the world in this context, and that's how we found out about Meghan. And then shortly after that, it was a few months that they announced that they were engaged. And obviously, coming from the royal family, this is a very unexpected courtship. And that's mainly because, as we know, it's a very white, elitist institution.
What's different about the way Meghan's joined the royal family and has been treated as opposed to Kate, for instance?
Yeah, I mean, compared to Kate, Meghan, she comes from a humble beginning.
Right.
She knows what it's like to work for her money and her success. Like, her father was working in the film industry, but I don't think she came from the kind of wealth that Kate Middleton came from. She obviously is American. And on top of that, she is, as she identifies, as a biracial woman. So she's African-American and she is white.
Right.
So that in itself is definitely something that they didn't necessarily expect of Harry. And a lot of reports were saying, well, she's different from the blondes that he's dated. His last long-term girlfriend was a white blonde woman, a British woman. So it was definitely, as people say, it was a very unexpected match.
And now she's expecting.
The rumors say that she's expecting a little boy, so.
What has been happening in conversation around this yet unborn child?
So as I wrote in my piece, this child has been subjected to what many mixed-race people have experienced, which is fetishization.
And which is a really strange thing to talk about in an unborn child.
Yes, and it's not the fetishization that you might expect or might think it means, but essentially, I am mixed race. I'm half Filipino and half Jamaican. And a lot of mixed race people that I know and just in general, it's the idea that people who are mixed race are better looking, they're smarter, they're just more, they're better off in the world. The main thing is they're reduced to their looks a lot of the time. So with this unborn baby, people have been talking about it in the sense that, oh, I wonder what this child will look like, how black it will look.
Right.
Will it be white passing? And in all actuality, we know that it's going to probably be very white passing. Megan is very fair skinned, but at the same time, it will have a portion. It will be part African American. So already people are very obsessed with the royal family in general. And every time Kate and William were pregnant, there were a lot of like forensic mock-ups of what this child will look like.
Right.
But the conversation when it comes to Megan and Harry, it's obviously going to be very tainted towards the fact that, oh, she's half black, so will it have her hair or will it have her nose? So
Right. It's
something that has already started crazily enough when this child is not born, and I can only assume how this will turn out when it's actually born.
We're going to get back to talking more about the royal baby very soon, but as somebody who is mixed race and who has experienced that, give us an example of how that manifests in your daily life. What do people say and do, and what impact does it have?
Yeah, I mean, when I was younger, I didn't actually realize that I was mixed race. It was kind of like, oh, these are my parents. Like, I'm no different than anyone else. But I think when I was in still grade school, I remember the first time I realized it, because one of my teachers was like, oh, mixed kids are always so beautiful. And I took it as a compliment because I'm like, oh, thanks.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. Like, that's nice that I have some sort of advantage because I do look a little bit different. Like, I don't, when I was in school, I didn't look like the black girls or I didn't look like the other Asian girls. And I always thought, oh, am I too black to be hanging out with these girls? Am I too Asian? Like, I don't fit it anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And when I actually went into university and moved to Toronto, a bigger city, and started to meet a lot of people of different races, I realized that being mixed race was something that people just loved to comment on and people loved to ask me, like, oh, where are you from? Like, every single week I will get, oh, what are you? Where are you from? And I know that these comments, they're not malicious, but it makes you realize, and from a young age, I realized that being mixed race, I would always in some way be reduced to the way I look. And it's comments like, oh, like when you meet me, they're like, oh, I can, when I tell them where I'm from, they're like, oh, I could see the Asian in you. It's like, oh, I see your eyes like that. That put me off. I didn't know what you were. And they're just constantly dissecting me for the way I look. And it's really dehumanizing because I wrote in my piece, like, it kind of like separates you from your body because you're like, here's this random person oftentimes that you don't even know. And they're talking about the way you look and you're just like, okay, cool. Like, but that's just a portion of who I am. It's with anyone who is mixed race. Like, we all have very similar experiences with being kind of dissected for the way we look.
Why does that happen to mixed race people in particular? And it's considered, to your point, well-meaning or complimentary, because we obviously wouldn't, or at least most of us wouldn't by now, say those things to someone who was black or who was Asian and say, oh, you know, I can see your hair is like that. What gives people the comfort level to do that to you and other mixed race people?
Well, I think it's today we still hold ourselves to this Western ideal of beauty. And so when you see someone who is, for example, mixed Korean and white, you recognize these features that we generally see as more beautiful. So this Korean person who, like most full Korean people, will usually have what, like, say, dark black hair and like very Asian features. But then you see someone who's Korean and Irish and you're like, oh, you have such beautiful brown hair and your brown eyes. Like, you're just a great mix of cultures. And not always is that person meaning to put down the other race, but we are seeing mixed race people with their proximity to whiteness, right?
Right.
Oftentimes, I spoke to an expert in this piece. Her name's Sharon Chang, and she wrote a book called Raising Mixed Race. And she pointed out that a lot of the times we are just, it's usually people who are mixed white that these comments are made more often. And it's just constantly comparing. It's like, oh, like the black person, they have such Eurocentric features. It's so beautiful. But you don't even realize that we're holding ourselves to this certain standard when like a black woman who is fully black can be just as beautiful or more beautiful. But because it's a little bit different or it's a little bit more like what you'll see in a magazine, like people feel the need to comment on it. Like if someone says that to me, oh, your hair is real. Like that's so beautiful. And it's like, that's kind of offensive to my black culture and my black parent. And people don't realize like, you're putting one parent over the other, and that's a complex, especially when they're children, because they don't realize.
Can we also talk about racialization and the fact that mixed race people generally have lighter skin?
Yes, and that's obviously a big portion of this. Colorism plays into this a lot with certain cultures, especially with black cultures. Just within the black community in general, there has always been a certain standard of beauty based on the color of your skin, and lighter skin has always been seen as more privileged and more beautiful, which obviously I don't believe in and I don't agree with.
Right.
But it all comes back to that. Like with their proximity to whiteness, obviously you're going to be lighter if you're mixed. So people don't realize that you're making these comments and they are very racist because you're pitting one race as better than the other.
To play devil's advocate with respect to just the royal baby for a second, how much of this, and it's not the kid's fault, obviously, but how much of the scrutiny around this is what Meghan Markle signed up for? All royal everythings get scrutinized. It doesn't matter whether the royal baby is white or mixed race or whatever. That kid is under a microscope from the second he or she is born.
Yeah, I think to a certain extent, she definitely, this is something that comes with the territory. And it's also important to note that this child is going to be exceptionally privileged.
Yeah.
And when I say I'm nervous about the royal baby, I'm not like completely nervous that they're going to have a terrible life. They're going to have a great life. If they deal with any sort of racism, they're going to have resources to deal with it. They have all the money and the resources in the world. At the end of the day, every mixed race person, like you grow up and a lot of the times you don't really realize you're different. You kind of just want to fit in with your surroundings. And with this child, it's going to grow up in very white British circles. But I think even if they don't start to question their identity when they're younger, and that's not something you should have to think about when you're younger, but there's going to be a certain point when this child will grow up and start to realize, oh, there's this part of me that is very different from my surroundings and something that I want to be closer with. And I think Meghan Markle, she has been very open about her race. And in all of this kerfuffle with the media, like she is very adamant to remind people that she is proud of being African-American. So I think this child will have a mother who will be supportive of this child wanting to understand their identity. And Harry did point out in his letter that he knows that people will say, well, this is what she signed up for. But at the same time, like no one signs up for racist comments. And you kind of have to realize it is the 21st century, regardless of what family you're in. It's pretty unacceptable to make racist comments towards someone based on their skin color.
How can the media do this better? Because on the one hand, they are going to write about the appearance of every royal baby because every royal baby is a big deal. And like you said, they were already putting portraits together for every one of this current generation of babies. How can they give this one the same scrutiny that they would give to Will and Kate's latest child without crossing the line into fetishization?
Well, I guess the first step is not to say that this child looks like it's from Compton.
Right. Yeah, no, mistakes have been made. Let's be clear.
Yeah, I think it's inevitable that, like you said, they're going to dissect this child regardless, and it's going to likely be very white passing. I think it's hard to say that there's a certain way they can do it because this is just kind of the reality. And yes, it's going to be black. Like, we're not going to ignore that fact, right? But I think what I want to get at this is that the way we talk about other mixed race people, you can't just pit the races against each other. It's kind of just like this is normal now.
Yeah.
In Canada, like in 2011, almost 5% of all unions were mixed race. Like it's likely higher than that now. And this is just a reality. It's definitely not a reality for the royal family. But I think we just have to use this as an example and set the standard for the way we talk about other mixed race people. And you just have to realize the implications you are sending towards people of color.
Is it a good thing that we're having this conversation because it means that there is actually some color in the royal family?
I mean, a lot of people are saying, like, why do we need to have this conversation? Why can't we just accept that she is Black or she is biracial? I think it's important to have the conversation. I read this quote somewhere that a drop of coffee in this in the cup or something like that is not going to make a difference. Like, having Meghan Markle, a biracial woman, in the royal family is not going to make a difference with anything, really, with the history of the monarchy. Let's be honest, a very racist history.
Yeah.
And having one very white-passing biracial woman in the family is not going to delete racism. And having children who are part Black is not going to change a lot. But I think these conversations are important to have just in general with the way we talk about mixed-race people. It's not going to create a huge change, but it's definitely a shift. And it's a step forward, I think.
Has Meghan herself ever talked about being mixed race and the kind of fetishization you're talking about?
I mean, she's talked about it a lot, but she wrote a really good essay for Elle in 2015 when she was still on Suits. And it was an essay about her ethnicity and her background. And she wrote about the first time she had to complete a census. And she was in grade school, and she remembers that there wasn't an option for someone like her who was mixed race. It was just like Black or Caucasian. Mm-hmm. And her teacher noticed that she was confused, and she was like, I don't really know which one to select, which is a real issue and a real question for a lot of mixed race people. And she said that her teacher told her to pick white because, quote unquote, that's how she looked. And Meghan decided to leave it blank. And she wrote that she left it blank because her identity was a question. Her identity was a blank to her. And obviously she is a woman who has explored her identity, who has written about it, and who has been very vocal with the way she has been fetishized, but also just her journey towards understanding who she is. And I think that says a lot for someone who is joining this family and for someone who is going to raise kids in such a spotlight. I think she is grounded in that way. So, yeah.
One of the people you spoke to was a Toronto model who's dealt with this. Can you tell me her story?
Yeah. So I spoke with Sasha Exeter. She is a model, influencer. She's kind of an entrepreneur as well. And she has a daughter who is biracial. So Sasha is Black and her husband is white French Canadian. So she actually told me that when she was pregnant, that was the first time she realized that mixed race kids were fetishized as much as they are. Because as soon as people found out that her husband was white, if they didn't know already, the comments would start. It would be like, oh, your kid's going to be so beautiful. And she remembers going home to her husband and being like, how do they know that our kid's going to be beautiful? What if it's not?
Mm-hmm.
Like, just because we are of different races doesn't mean anything. And there was one comment that sticks in my head and I will never forget. She said that a mixed race woman actually told her, when she saw that she was pregnant, she was like, quote unquote, you know what they say, mixed kids are God's Photoshop.
Whoa.
And Sasha actually was very concerned and she asked the woman to clarify. And the woman was like, well, have you ever seen ugly mixed kids? And that is just the attitude that a lot of people have towards mixed children. Like, they see them as this like exotic kind of creature that regardless of like what the parents look like, this child is just going to be beautiful because of their genetic background. And so Sasha, now her daughter, she gave birth to her daughter. Her daughter's now over a year. And she says the comments don't stop. She still gets a lot of comments about the way her daughter looks, particularly about her daughter's hair. And she has very curly, thick hair. And Sasha says that it's just, it doesn't make sense why we need to comment on those sort of things, because people are obviously implying that, oh, she has a good mix of your kinky hair with your husband's nice, smooth European hair, you know? So she talked a lot about that. And now her husband and her actually don't talk to her daughter about her looks at home. Like, that's not a conversation that they will have. They actually work to focus on values that they want to instill in her daughter. So like intelligence, strength, motivation, success, those are the kinds of things they want to instill instead of her looks, because she already knows, like Sasha said, that her daughter already knows that people are constantly telling her that she's cute and she's only like 18 months old. So she doesn't want her to grow up and have a complex like many of us grow up to have and thinking that, oh, thank goodness my dad is white, so I look like this and I don't look like my friends who are fully Black and vice versa. So it's something that parents now have to be aware of, especially if you're someone, particularly a person, a white person, who if you're married or you're having a child with someone of color, you have to realize like you're raising a child differently than you would someone who is not mixed race.
Did Sasha tell you, or do you have any good ways to shut those comments down? Did you ever find a good thing to say?
Yeah, it's hard to know what to say when someone just blatantly like comments on your looks, especially when you don't know them. It's kind of just like a lot of the time when people say, oh, you're so beautiful. I'm like, thanks to my parents. Like, there's really like it has nothing to do with me. Yeah. And that's like when you say that to anyone, really, like at the end of the day, like they were just born like that. Like they had nothing to do with the way they look. One person once said when I was away in New York, he asked where I was from. Then I said Toronto. And then he said, oh, what's your background? And I said, Jamaican and Filipino. And he said, wow, they did a really good job on you. And I was like, thanks, I'm an object. I appreciate that. Like, the people think it's a compliment, but I often don't know what to say. Like, usually...
Well, it's hard because it's an offensive statement presented complimentary,
right?
Yeah, like, how can you blow that off?
And then I kind of look like the bitch who's being like, who doesn't appreciate a compliment when she gets one, or who is snobby when she just, like, walks away and doesn't say anything. So oftentimes I'm just lame and I just say, thanks, because I don't really know what else to say. And I kind of shift the conversation forward, or we just end the conversation completely. But it's kind of hard to explain to someone. Even when I'm trying to explain the story, people think that I have insecurities about being mixed race, or that I don't appreciate what I have, or we see ourselves as, mixed race people see themselves as more privileged. But they don't realize that because we are mixed race, you are talking to two different sides of our cultures, and it is offensive sometimes when you focus on one and not the other.
Thanks, Ebony.
Thank you.
Ebony Renee Baker is a writer at Flare.com. And that was The Big Story. For more from us, you can find us at thebigstorypodcast.ca. All of our other episodes are there, including zero other episodes about the royal family. And we're at frequencypodcastnetwork.com if you want to check out us or our brother or sister shows. We are at Frequency Pods on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you just want to talk to us, we're at The Big Story FPN on Twitter. What we'd prefer is if you found us on your podcast app of choice, Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever, and you subscribed, and you left us a rating and a review. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.